You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, here we go. It is time for the scoop, and let's start here. A-Rod, heading up a group attempting to buy the New York Mets, in an interview yesterday, he suggested that players and owners should agree to a revenue-sharing proposal like the NBA, NFL, and NHL, although he claims he never specifically mentioned a salary cap. A cap generally goes hand-in-hand with a rev share. MLBPA President Tony Clark responded to A-Rod, quote, Alex benefited as much as anybody from the battles his union fought against owners' repeated attempts to get a salary cap. Now that he is attempting to become an owner himself, his perspective appears to be different, and that perspective does not reflect the best interests of the players. Does this exchange hurt A-Rod's efforts to buy the team?
Well, the players didn't like it. Several players came out and, you know, called him a fraud and brought up all the, you know, lying he did and the PED situation. It's not going to make him very popular in the eyes of the players, but I'm not sure, Mace, that matters when you're doing a sale. I don't think Major League Baseball will actually hold it against A-Rod. Do you?
You know, he's actually towing the owner's line.
Right, right.
There's a huge hypocrisy here on the part of A-Rod. He made God knows how many hundred millions of dollars playing baseball. And that was thanks to he was standing on the shoulders of a lot of people who suffered and sacrificed in order to create the system as it is. It is the one sport without a salary cap. It is the one sport where your salary seems to be fairly unlimited. Mike Trout's in the $400 millions, guaranteed $400 million. So I think it's hypocritical of A-Rod to now flip sides, but I don't think it hurts him with owners. Owners, I think, would love to have a rev share and a salary cap.
Right, so maybe it will. Maybe he's what do you call it, preaching to the choir.
Positioning himself as a potential owner.
Yeah. Mace, it's been almost 9 months since the Nationals beat the Astros in the 2019 World Series to claim their first championship in franchise history. But Houston pitching coach Brent Strom is still holding the grudge. He says that Washington entered the seventh inning of that game down 2-0, struggling against Zach Greinke. And he says this all came down, this whole series and whole championship came down to one pitch. Listen to Brent Strom.
I still reflect back, and I know people laugh at me about it. On my screensaver on my computer is the 2-1 changeup that he threw to Soto that was a strike that got called a ball in the seventh inning, and I think changed the entire World Series. Otherwise, we'd be wearing World Series rings with Cole coming in the eighth and ninth, and we would have another ring. But the pitch was there. It was not called a strike. Human error. Computer had it as 95% strike, and I'm still pissed about it, to be quite frank. So I hold on to grudges.
All right, he can hold on to grudges, but Mace, there's a couple of things here. Number one, the pitch, as he pointed out, would have made the count 2-2.
Yes.
Instead of 3-1. So it wouldn't even have sat Juan Soto down. It wouldn't have got him an out. Second of all, for a guy who works for the Astros to say that one pitch
right
cost Houston a championship, how many pitches could I point to in the World Series against the Dodgers when they were banging a trash can? Isn't this incredibly tone deaf for Brent Strom?
It's tone deaf, and the theme is hypocrisy today. It's unbelievably hypocritical to claim that that one pitch twisted everything when they were banging on trash cans to signal hitters during the 2017 World Series at Minute Maid Park. So go cry your tears somewhere else. I have absolutely no sympathy whatsoever for the Houston Astros.
Yeah, me either. I think that's almost an incredibly pompous position to take considering what that team did.
Yep. All right. USC is a private school, so they don't need to release information about contracts for faculty and coaches. And as a result, we never really knew what Clay Helton was making until now. According to a person who knows what's listed on USC's 990 IRS form, right after USC got whooped by Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl, Lynn Swann gave Clay Helton a five-year, $23 million extension. That means he's making $4.6 million per year. Only 19 college football coaches in America make more than Clay. For example, Ohio State head coach Ryan Day makes less than Clay Helton. He makes four. Clay makes 4.6. What does this say about Lynn Swann, Clay Helton, and the future of Trojans football?
Well, Lynn Swann's going to go down as the worst athletic director in the history of USC. He is the answer to the question, what happens if you let the guys with all the money make all the decisions? He was basically placed in there from what I've talked to several people that work at USC, and we're in the middle of this. He was placed in there by the biggest donor to the USC athletic program, and he had no experience, Mace, none,
yep,
running an athletic department. He'd never even worked in an athletic department. And so because he was a high-profile Hall of Fame football player, everybody thought, oh, he'll figure it out. And you see that was a disaster. Now, a lot of people high on USC this year, and you and I like Clay personally. He's a really good guy. So maybe he can turn it around, but you and I both think college football is not going to happen, and that means Clay will be on the case for another year, and Pac-12 coaches are just going to recruit against him and say, hey, you don't want to go to USC. That guy's, you'll be playing for a different coach in 2 years. So I think that Lynn Swann has created a mess for USC that it's going to take him years to clean up.
And that may be why Mike Bone didn't make a change at head coach, because they do have him on a big contract. I always assumed that Clay was not one of the highest paid head coaches in the conference. Now he may be. Is he the highest paid Pac-12 coach?
It would be close. David Shaw is at a private school at Stanford, and he makes a lot of money. Chip Kelly cost a pretty penny to get him to come take the UCLA job. I think it would be in Marco Cristobal, the head coach at Oregon, makes a bunch of money. I think it would be in one of those four guys would probably be it.
Yeah. I was just pulling it up.
If I had to guess, it's Shaw or Kelly, but I'm guessing.
Yeah, he's doing well. I can't quite get to the information now, so take it.
Okay. Mace, there might be, after all this time, a little-known 13th zodiac sign. Did you hear about this?
I did.
All right, so NASA, who does not normally dwell in astrology, released a press release from a few years ago where they pointed out that Ophiuchus is one of the 13 major constellations in the zodiac, according to ancient Babylonians. The Babylonians left it out of the zodiac because they followed the 12-month calendar, and so Ophiuchus didn't make the cut, according to NASA. Now, many questions here. Number one, do you believe in astrology? Do you ever read your astrological sign? And when someone who you respect starts talking about astrology like it's a real thing, do you lose any actual respect for them? What do you think?
I think astrology is just a load of crap. Okay. I always have, never believed it, never believed those little, when I was a little kid, I would read the horoscope out of the newspaper. It was always like the most generic thing in the world, and it could be true, might not be true, who knows. I've never had my charts done. I refuse to believe that my life is somehow being dictated or controlled by some star somewhere. And stop, by the way, blaming every time something bad happens. People will say, Mercury's in retrograde. As far as I can tell, Mercury must always be in retrograde. Because people bitch about it all the time. I think astrology is just hocus pocus hooey.
If you meet somebody and somewhere in the conversation they start talking about their sign, don't you lose respect for them?
I do. You've lost me. You lost me at I'm an Aries.
What about like those people where one of the first things they ask you when you meet them is, what sign are you? Or like very soon into the first conversation, they'll say, oh, I could tell. I know you're a Libra, aren't you?
Wait, Lindsay, what are you? What's your sign?
A Libra.
Okay, so do you believe in it at all?
No, not at all.
Funch, do you, John?
I don't. Funch, do you?
Not at all.
Yeah, so yeah,
who are these people that buy this?
I have a really good friend who is very into it, and it was like I was saying, one of the first things he said to me when we met was about my sign. And every time something happens, whether it's like a really good thing or a really bad thing, or if like I overreact to something, he always references my sign, and it drives me nuts.
Yeah, I just think it's a bunch of hocus pocus. No respect for the Zodiac.
We are in agreement, folks.
Excellent. All right, NBA players in the bubble in Orlando are not being tested for recreational drugs like marijuana. Golden State beat writer Marcus Thompson has theorized that players might need more than 1 pound of marijuana with them in the bubble, as they could end up being in Orlando for a maximum of 82 days. And that might be enough, as by Thompson's math, that would only allow for 2 blunts consisting of 2 grams of pot apiece per day. And that's not taking into account sharing with other players who want to get high but don't bring their own supply. Al Harrington, an NBA veteran who now has his own cannabis company, Viola Brands, told The Athletic, quote, "Bring more than you think you're going to need." John, what percentage of NBA players use cannabis, and will that percentage go up inside the NBA bubble?
Okay, so this is an interesting question because, like Michael Thompson, I've been traveling with NBA players, and I've never actually seen anyone do it. Now, I'm not naive enough to think that none of them are doing it, but they do a good job of if and when they do it, keeping it, like, I've never smelled it in the hotel. I've never, you know, I just, it hasn't been a part of my NBA experience. Michael claims, and of course, weed was at an all-time high when he played, that he never saw it either. So it's hard to answer your question, what percentage of, I think that any, like, if you ask what percentage of people.
So you have never detected anything associated with cannabis in all your days in the NBA?
From a player.
From a player.
Correct.
Well, who else is doing it?
Well, who do you think? But, you know, I'm not a weed guy, but, you know, let's put it this way. If we did, and this is how I'll answer your question. If we said what percentage of people at ESPN LA are into weed, I would guess it'd be about 50%, right?
Yeah, I'd say about 50%. So it's funny, because I've been open about it, people will come to me and ask me questions about it.
Right.
Like, what strain do you think is the right strain for me? I was like, I'm not your medical weed doctor.
But I actually think it's the bubble is hard enough to pull off without testing for recreational drugs. I actually think it's smart of the NBA not to worry about that right now. They've got bigger fish to fry, so to speak.
Yes,
so,
they do.
I think it's smart that's the way they're handling it. All right, Mace, Kanye West can't decide if he is or isn't running for president. 2 days ago, the 43-year-old rapper
thought he dropped out.
Had reportedly withdrawn from the U.S. presidential race less than 2 weeks after announcing his plans to run. But then yesterday, he filed paperwork in Oklahoma, along with the $35,000 filing fee that would put him on the ballot in that state. Do you think Kanye actually runs for president?
You know, Kanye seems, and apparently this is what I read, the family is really concerned about Kanye right now because they think he's really off the rails. He can't get on the ballot, and it's too late to get on the ballot in a lot of places. So he's not going to be on the ballot in a lot of places. So what's weird, I saw somebody did a presidential poll, and Kanye was at 2%.
Which is pretty good for a guy who just got in 2 weeks ago.
There are people who, I guess, would support Kanye. He's certainly got a great name, and he's got a lot of fans, and he's got a following and all that stuff.
And, Mace, he's got 4 words. First Lady Kim Kardashian. I mean, come on. You'd have to be at least interested in what that would look like.
I think we should go with something tried and true at this point. I think we've had our celebrity experience. I don't think he will wind up running. I don't think he will. By the way, Clay Helton, third highest paid coach in the Pac-12. Chris Peterson is at number one, $4.63 million a year.
He's retired.
That's right. He's gone. David Shaw, $4.61 million. And then Clay. So he's the second highest paid head coach in the Pac-12.
Yeah, David Shaw gets NFL offers every year, so Stanford has to keep up in his salary.
Yeah, yeah. All right, coming up next for you, we've got a Lakers prize pack to give away. John?
Excellent.
But before that, we have Ned Coletti.
Oh, Ned Coletti first, then a Lakers prize pack.
It's all happening.
Oh, it is all happening. Ned is next. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Dodgers have their first exhibition game, real game, on Sunday at Dodger Stadium versus Arizona. It's Sunday against Arizona, Monday against Arizona, Tuesday against the Angels, and then, just 6 days away, the Dodgers open the 2020 season, the 60-game sprint at Dodger Stadium against the San Francisco Giants. Clayton Kershaw versus Johnny Cueto. And joining us right now is a guy who I've watched do some baseball here, do some of these intra-squad games, which is cool. The intra-squad games have been going on, and John Hartung is there, and Jerry Hairston Jr. is there, and Ned Coletti is there, too. Ned joins us now. Hey, Ned, how are you, man?
Hey, doing good, guys. Hope you're doing well.
We are, Ned, and we appreciate you coming. How do you like doing those games? I mean, that's something you've always had the personality for. Do you enjoy it, or are you anxious to get it over with?
No, I love doing it, really. I love watching the game. I love, especially these games, because you've got a lot of young players that you hear about but you don't see a lot, because they're still working their way up, and I enjoy it. I enjoy having a chance to tell a few stories here and there and really watch the game and hopefully provide at least one piece of wisdom every 3 hours.
So after all of this talk about whether there was going to be a season and how long the season would be and all that stuff, are you surprised that we've actually gotten to the starting line?
Not necessarily. I think there's a lot of interest in it, obviously, and it's such a kind of a huge industry, and also something that I think the American public is starving for, sports on television, especially the game of baseball. So I thought everybody was going to do everything they could to make this happen, and we're 6 days away from starting a 60-game trek, and then another month of postseason. So still a long way to go, but I'm not necessarily surprised that they got to this point. I think people are paying attention. They're being wise with what they do. And we're writing history every day, and that's, this is going to be part of it.
All right, Ned, for people who don't know, Ned was the general manager of the Dodgers. He worked for the Cubs. He worked for the Giants. He's a baseball lifer. So we've got this 60-game sprint that you talked about. So every game magnifies in importance. If you had a young player, and this could really apply to any team, but I'm thinking like a Will Smith or a Gavin Lux, and that kid is struggling. Now, normally during the season, you would have the option to send him down to AAA and find his stroke and get him right. But in this scenario, there are no minor leagues. You can't send him down, and you really don't have a lot of time for someone who's struggling to find his stroke. So how do you play those situations? Do you sit the kid, or do you let him work through it, or what do you think?
Well, I think you play it different being with the Dodgers than you would with pretty much any other team. I think with the Dodgers, you've got such a deep group that if somebody's struggling offensively or defensively, but let's say offensively, but the defense is pretty good, plus you have a DH now, so you can probably be more patient. I think this organization has been really patient with some players that have played huge dividends. I mean, Max Muncy's a star today, but if you look at how he was acquired and then the start that he had, most teams would have sent him out. But this team has got the depth, so they do have the patience to wait. Now, if you're another type of team that doesn't have a lot of depth and you don't have a lot of offense and you do have a young player that is struggling getting out of the gate, that's a tough call. You've got to really, you almost have to go with it at that point in time and try and give that player a day here or a day there to kind of catch their breath a little bit. But, you know, you're right. You don't have a farm system to really go to. Teams have got satellite camps set up. Every team has got one nearby. Dodgers happen to be at USC. So, you know, you've got a little bit of taxi squad, let's call it, there. But again, if you're breaking with an expanded roster, they're one of your guys, and so you're going to have to be patient with it and hope that they can pick it up quick. Because if you start out 2-8, you might be done.
Yeah, yeah. Former Dodger general manager, now Sportsnet LA commentator Ned Colletti is with us. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. The one guy of the young guys, the one guy that has jumped out at me, and I saw him hit, I think, two bombs, is Edwin Rios. What's his future on this team in this 60-game sprint?
Oh, I think he's got a great chance to make this club. I really like this kid. He's got not only talent, but he's got a good mind, and he really is. I think he slows the game down. He's got good presence to him. I mean, even last year, it came up a few times, hit the longest home run of the season for the Dodgers, and they set a National League record. So they had a lot of qualifiers, so to speak, and he happened to hit the longest. I love how he plays. I love the stroke. He's a big kid. He's a strong kid. And sometimes a swing can get long when you're got a little bit of size to you. But his doesn't, and he stays quick in the zone, and I think he's going to have a chance to be a really good player, and I'd be surprised if he doesn't break camp with this group. I mean, he could DH, he can play first, he can play third, he can play left, he can play right, like a lot of guys in the National League now, a lot of Dodgers. There's versatility to the defense, so you've got a lot of different places you can play him. I think he makes the club, and I think he contributes.
So I know Gavin Lux got to camp late. Is he on schedule? Will he be ready to go? And is he a starter now for this team?
I think so. But again, you've got, you know, this is, you know, in the old days, you'd run your eight position players out there, and you knew that they were, barring an injury, they're going to play 145-plus games at that position. Those days are over.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of different competition on this club. You've got a great balance, left-handed hitting, right-handed hitting. So you're going to have some matchups from time to time. I think Gavin Lux gets the majority of time at second base, but you're going to see Kike there. You may see Chris Taylor there. You know, you never know who's going to play there. Max Muncy really started to play better there, although he's probably going to play first. But again, you may have scenarios where you're going to play Rios at first and you're going to play Muncy at second. You look at the lineup, and you write down how many positions all these guys can play.
Yep.
And so it's tough to say, except if you're a Betts or a Bellinger or a Seager or a JT, you know, you're going to play every single day. I think you're going to see a lot of different people playing. I think it keeps guys fresh. It also adds competition to it. It's a very close-knit group. But make no mistake, they do want to play. And so they will compete to play. And I think that it's a team that's special, and I think it's got a chance to make the run all the way to the end.
Ned Colletti is our guest. And, Ned, you mentioned DH. What's your best guess at the end of these 60 games? Who logs the most innings as the DH? They have so many options. My guess is that you talked about Bellinger and Betts. They're so good defensively. They're in the outfield. Pollock's good. My guess is it would probably be Jock Peterson, but all those combinations you just talked about, you could play Turner at DH and put Kike in the infield. You could mix and match about seven or eight different ways. Who do you think plays the most games at DH?
That's a tough question, but it's really a tough question because of the number of choices that they have. And you have a DH, you can keep put JT in that spot once in a while, keep him off his feet. You can put almost anybody in that spot. I think you'll see Chris Taylor in that spot. I think you'll see Jock in that spot. I think you'll see Rios in that spot. Those are probably the top three, if I'm just a guess at this point in time. I think they'll maybe get the lion's share of that. Kike, too. I mean, it's, you know, this is a special group, and it's they're gonna fight for time, and you got one of Dave Roberts. Luckily, he's got at least four extra at bats every game to keep somebody in there. So a lot of different options.
Ned, in terms of the rotation, Walker Buehler's not fully built up yet. I don't think Julio Urías is fully built up yet. How do they deal with that?
Well, I think with a shortened schedule, but with also an extra few guys on your roster, I think you'll fill it with a bullpen guy here and there. You'll fill it with an extra inning here, extra inning there. And I think this team, again, I keep repeating myself here, I think the team is so good at that, you know, it's going to be tough for anybody to beat them. So they play with the house's money a little bit. And so if they don't have a starting pitcher that's going to give them 100 pitches the first time out, is it really that big a deal? You know, if Walker Buehler is giving them 60 pitches for a start and 75 pitches a second start, and you really need a fifth starter, I think, in your ninth game and maybe in your 18th game, so you've got that spot there, whether it's Stripp or somebody else. You've got so many different options. And what happens early in a season, you try to get your bullpen guys into games, because everybody needs to get that first game under their belt. Mm-hmm. And I think that somebody might be 15 to 20 pitches behind everybody else, I really don't think that's a big deal. Certainly not with a roster that's going to have more pitching to it than, you know, it's almost like a September call-up type roster. You just got the options to use, and you do want to get guys in games. You don't want a relief pitcher sitting from the last exhibition game on Tuesday. You don't want him sitting until the next Monday or Tuesday. You want to get him in a game and get his feet wet, and no matter who they are, and start to build some confidence for the long haul. Plus, a guy like Walker Buehler, you really need him. And, you know, I'm not counting the chickens before they hatch type of thing here. You know, the team is built to win. It's going to take a major upset for them not to make the postseason. You really need him at his utmost the last couple of weeks of September and in the month of October. That's when you really need him at his utmost. You don't necessarily need him at his utmost on the 20th of August or the 10th of August. You know, you've got to kind of measure it out. And that he's a little bit behind, to me, that's not a big deal. I think, you know, Clayton is throwing well, and he's going to be stretched out. Julio's a little bit behind that, but you've got guys that can pitch, and you got to get your bullpen guys in there too. So the combination, that everybody will be where they need to be when they need to be there.
All right, Ned. Last thing for you, for me at least. Mason and I have a disagreement. I think the Dodgers are going to boat race this division. I think they're going to win it by 5 games. I think they could win 40-plus games. I think they're that good. Mason is convinced because it's a short sample size, it's going to come down to the last weekend of the year. If I made you get in one of those two camps, which one would you lean towards?
Last week of the year for what, the second or third place?
Away with it?
Yeah, I think they'll win it fairly easily. I mean, again, you got 60 games, so it'd be tough to win by 20, which they did a couple, you know, last year or, you know, recently. And I think there's two sets of teams that benefit from this setting. I think it's a team like the Dodgers with the extra depth, because as you put together your 1 to 30, who's got better 26 to 30 than they do, let alone 1 to 25?
Right.
So you got that benefit, and I think it may benefit a little bit of San Diego.
Yep.
Because what usually happens with your young players is they get 80 games in, 100 games in, and they start to tail a little bit. They start to wear down just a little bit. You know, they're in a boat race too, so you don't have to rest anybody if you're San Diego. You can let these kids play, and you may have enough pitching to compete for a wild card spot or something like that. But I don't see anybody beating the Dodgers.
Ned, here's why I'm cautious.
They're fierce, too, when you think about it.
Here's why I'm cautious. 7 straight division titles, only twice were they leading the division after 60 games.
But this is a different schedule, Ned. They're only playing 9 teams, and 6 of them had losing records last year. That's why I'm with you.
I mean, who's going to beat them? I mean, the San Diego Padres or whoever you think has got a chance to compete with them, they're going to have to really beat them 80% of the time they play them head-to-head. And are they that good to beat the Dodgers that many times? I don't see it.
Yeah. Hey, listen, last thing for you. Back to a player question, because there are two intriguing arms in the bullpen now. One is Blake Treinen, who had a really good 2018 for the A's, crashed last year. A good bounce-back candidate this year. And then Bruzdar Graterol, who came over in that trade with Minnesota and Boston. Tell me, give us a preview of those two guys.
Well, Trinan 2 years ago had a season that is Kenley Jansen's had some great seasons. I don't think he's ever had one as good as Trinan had 2 years ago. So it's worth the gamble. And any time you've got a pitcher that can pitch the ninth inning, you've got to add him to your staff. You've got to give him a chance. Even though he had a tough year last year, a little bit banged up injury-wise, you've got to give somebody like that a chance because the ninth inning is like no other inning. So you got to like him. He pitched last night a little bit too much of the zone. But, again, it's not even spring training against another team. It's against your teammates.
Yep.
Gatterall, I was really surprised that they were able to get him in the deal after Boston turned him down because they don't think he's going to be durable enough or healthy enough to be a starting pitcher. He's got a ways to go a little bit. He's a young guy. He's got a power arm, I mean, big time. And he's got the makeup to really pitch in the eighth or ninth inning, maybe in time. You know, the way I look at a player is you're going to see big league at-bats or big league stuff as a pitcher occasionally, and then you see it a little bit more often. And the more you see it, the closer they are to the big leagues. I think there may be he's probably going to make the team because the roster will be a little bit larger, and I think that they'll be able to use him in different situations. That they were able to add him with Mookie and David Price is like, really? I mean, it's like the rich getting richer. And I think that he's going to be a very good pitcher for them. I think he'll have his ups and downs this year a little bit as he gets it. But when you think about how Dave Roberts plays the players and how they match him up, he reminds me of Whitey Herzog back in the Cardinal days, mm-hmm. who always put his players in a position to be successful. Even if it was a backup catcher that had 100 at-bats, he was going to have 100 at-bats where he could really do some damage to get confidence and to really feel like he's part of the group. Dave Roberts, to me, is Whitey Herzog. He's the same kind of guy where he puts guys in a position to be successful, and he's patient with them. And I think that's what they do with Gatterall. And I think at the end of the day, you got Gatterall, Price, and Betts, and you know that's a pretty good haul for one deal.
All right, hey Ned, thank you very much for coming on, man. We appreciate it. Hey, we get to talk about actual baseball.
Yeah, it's been a while. Be well, gentlemen.
All right, keep it up, Ned. Thanks,
Ned. Yeah, they're doing a really good job with sort of a loose play-by-play of the games. It's been fun and it's been entertaining, and you get some extra insight out of it.
Yeah. By the way, you're the only one being cautious. The Dodgers are winning this thing by at least 5 games, at least 5.
Okay.
Last week.
I'm rooting
please,
to be wrong.
Please.
I'm dying to be wrong.
Yeah. This is a boat race.
All right. Hey, we are celebrating, John. Did you know we're celebrating Lakers Fan Friday?
Sure, why not?
Right now, fill up the phones, 877-710-ESPN. Somebody is going to win a Lakers prize pack, which includes a Lakers jersey, a limited edition collectible figurine from Small Stars. Those are actually really cool. Exclusive access to our Lakers virtual watch party on July 30th and a $75 Pizza Hut voucher. All that stuff. It is brought to you by Pizza Hut. Pizza Hut's kitchens are safely open and serving large pizzas with 3 toppings for $9.99. Order for delivery or carry out at pizzahut.com. Fill up the phones, 877-710-ESPN. Very simple over-under game to play.
Okay.
Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
710 ESPN, Mason in Ireland. What's going on? Hey, it's Friday, for what that's worth. It's Friday. Tomorrow, Galaxy versus LAFC in the bubble in Orlando. Is it still El Tráfico if you're in a bubble?
Why not?
Much less traffic in the bubble. And then, as we just talked to Ned Colletti, official exhibition game for the Dodgers. First one is Sunday at Dodger Stadium against Arizona. And the opener is just 6 days away. Lakers-Clippers just 13 days away. It's all coming, people. It's all coming. All right, so we've got a cool prize package right now. This is a Lakers jersey, a limited edition collectible figurine from Small Stars, exclusive access to our Lakers virtual watch party on July 30th, and a $75 Pizza Hut voucher. John, you've got the calls lined up?
Yep, let's go to Jose in Chino. Jose, you're on 710 ESPN. You ready? Jose, you ready? Going once? Going
Jose?
Twice? Gone. Alan from Crestline. Alan, you're on 710 ESPN. You ready?
Yes. Hello.
Okay.
All right, Alan, here we go.
Kobe Bryant is the career Lakers leader in steals. How many steals did Kobe Bryant have for the Lakers?
8,024
is the guess.
Okay, fine. You got to put these guys on hold. Here's Ari from Sherman Oaks. Hey, Ari, you're on seven. Hey, go ahead, Ari.
Is it over under?
Over under.
Let's say under.
No. It's closest without going over. Sorry about that.
I'm sorry. Let's do 9,000.
9,000.
Okay, hang on, Ari. We go to Sam in Huntington Beach. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how you doing?
How many steals for Kobe in his career?
Let's go 9,001.
9,001.
Okay, let's go Edgar in Costa Mesa. Hey, Edgar.
Hi.
How many steals for Kobe in his career?
I'd say 7,500.
Okay, good guess. Let's go to Dan in Las Vegas. Hey, Dan.
I'm going to go 1,000.
Okay. Mace, what is the actual number of steals?
1,944, which makes Dan the winner.
Yep, by a bunch.
Ooh. By
Dan,
a bunch.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you. Wow.
You were just guessing.
He's so excited.
I took a shot. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go low. I'm going to go super low.
Yeah, well, it worked.
You played it right, man. You played it right, Dan.
Mace, what does he win?
Lakers jersey, Lakers limited edition collectible figurine from Small Stars, exclusive access to our Lakers virtual watch party on July 30th, and a $75 Pizza Hut voucher.
There you go, Dan. Hang on. Funch will get your info. Enjoy that.
Thank you so much.
All right,
thanks for listening, Dan.
By the way, Lakers a week from Thursday are back up and running.
Right.
A week from Thursday. And speaking of the Lakers, you know who talked today?
No, who?
JR. The guy you want to silence.
Love JR.
You can't silence him anymore. He got a chance to talk today. First, he was asked, JR was asked over Zoom, to compare LeBron that he played with in Cleveland to LeBron that he's now playing with in L.A. Here's what he said.
I say more than anything, he's more patient now. I think when he was younger, he had that more of a shorter fuse with things, I would say. He let things roll off his back of his neck pretty easily now. Whether it be a good thing or a bad thing, obviously that hasn't changed his work ethic. But I think he's just more relatable and easier to get along with. Before it was just, you know, he's always been so focused on his drive and winning and stuff like that. But I feel like that pressure is kind of, that side of it is kind of off his shoulders. And he could just be him. He don't have to, you know, sit up and try to orchestrate the offense or the defense or what somebody did wrong. He can let the coaches do their job and I think that's a true testament to him growing because so many times I watch interviews and stuff and when people talk about him, they try to say he's quote unquote not coachable because he knows so much about the game, but he's probably the most coachable person out there just because he gives you his side or his opinion and then he might be right. I don't think that is the case, but for more than anything, I think he's just so much more patient in his delivery and how he goes about the process of the game. If he sees something that he don't like, of course he's going to say something, but I think he gives people more of a chance or opportunity to, you know, voice their opinion and do their job.
So he says it's a new improved LeBron.
Yeah, LeBron is more patient.
And also today, Dion Waiters spoke. He was asked if he's ready for more minutes now that Avery Bradley and Rajon Rondo are out. Here's Dion.
I've been in this position plenty of times. You know, I think I'm ready. Just continue to keep working, continue to get familiar, you know, with the sets and things like that. But at the end of the day, it's just still basketball. And, you know, I've been doing that my whole life. So just being ready when my number is called and just going out there and just, you know, trying to impact the game.
So did you also see who left the bubble today?
This is not Zion. I know Zion left the bubble.
No.
Somebody left today?
From one of the L.A. teams.
No.
Montrezl Harrell.
Really?
Yeah, family situation, so we hope everything's okay with his family.
Yeah.
But that would be a significant loss for the Clippers if he was unable to come back.
Oh, they don't beat the Lakers without Montrezl Harrell.
Well, because he's the guy who would probably spend the most time covering Anthony Davis.
Right, and he's basically sixth man of the year right now. And he gets that pick and roll going with Lou Williams in second halves, and they are pretty devastating together. And you're losing a big body that could potentially be thrown at Anthony Davis. Then you're just left with Ivica Zubac and who'd they sign? Joakim Noah.
Right.
Those would be their only two bigs without Harrell.
The Clippers had just gotten JaMychal Green out of quarantine on campus. And Doc Rivers is not talking about Marcus Morris, Ivica Zubac, and today's Landry Shamet. He was asked about those guys, and he's been given the same answer that all the coaches have been given, that they're not going to talk about who's there and who isn't. But the report on Harrell is that he has left the bubble to tend to a family emergency. He is expected to rejoin the team again, but now it's a matter, like it is with Zion, of when he comes back and how much he'll have to quarantine when he does. If he gets tested every day he's outside the bubble, he can do a 4-day quarantine, and I think it's twice as long if he doesn't. So that's and keep in mind, the Lakers play the Clippers a week from Thursday.
Yeah, it's happening fast. Happening fast. All right, coming up next for you is Radio Tinder. Linz has pulled some stuff for us. That's coming up next. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
All right, it's time for Radio Tinder. This is where Lindsay dusts off some topics for us. Lindsay, what do you got?
All right, guys. Earlier this week, a New York City restaurant hostess went viral on TikTok for rating her experiences serving different celebrities. In the video, which has more than 13 million views, she rated Gigi and Bella Hadid 10 out of 10, Beyonce 10 out of 10, Hailey Bieber 3.5 out of 10, saying she was not nice, and Kylie Jenner, a 2 out of 10, calling her out for leaving a $20 tip on a $500 bill, saying, do with that information what you will. Do you guys consider yourselves good tippers at restaurants? Swipe left or swipe right?
Yeah, I used to be a waiter, so I tend to tip probably more than I should. You know, the thing I do that Michael shakes his head at is I over-tip delivery people. Like, I tip delivery people 15%. I tip in-person people 20 to 25. But I tip, like, on my Fresh Brothers app, there's a button you can push, like, what percentage you want to tip the delivery guy. I always feel like the delivery guy gets screwed, so I give him 15%. But that's probably throwing away money. Most people just give the delivery guy $5 and be done with it, right? Do you tip the delivery guy?
I do. I tip him usually 20%.
You tip the delivery guy 20?
Tip the delivery guy 20%. Yeah, on top of everything else, it means you're going to get your food on time. Means you're gonna do, you know what I'm saying?
And they'll remember right. It next time.
Now, Mace, yes. What about takeout? If you go in to pick it up?
Never. I don't believe in tipping takeout.
I tip a little bit because I don't want a story to hit social media that I forgot to tip the guy.
I just don't think it's a required. It's not required.
I don't think tipping is ever required.
Yeah,
I know guys that never tip.
It's not required, but I will say my whole theory on tipping for takeout changed when at one point in college I worked at a chain restaurant where they had the to-go. They had a lot of to-go orders. And nowadays, especially with everyone ordering to-go, they had a whole station where they would have three or four people. And think about things that people order with their food, like extra dressing and
right.
no whatever on this. Like, it's their responsibility, just like a server would, to check and make sure that everything's right and package it up and make sure you have all the utensils and all that stuff. Because I can't tell you how many times I've been ticked off about stuff that isn't right with my food, and it's that person, the to-go person, that's always responsible for that. So if they do it right, I give them a good tip.
Can I tell you something really embarrassing?
Sure.
Okay. So, you know, I order donuts.
All the time.
All the time. And I have come to order these donuts. I always get the vanilla cream donuts. And they send a side of cream. I ask for a side of just the cream.
Oh, geez. Why don't you just ask for 10 pounds?
To dip the cream donut in the cream?
Yep. To dip the cream donut in the cream.
Yeah. I'm picturing Mason looking like Ben Stiller at the end of Dodgeball.
Yeah. DK's Donuts, man. They let you dip the donut in the cream.
And then they know it by now. So every time you have an order, they know extra cream on the side for that guy.
And by the way, because I tip, donuts show up like in 10 minutes.
There you
it's
go.
Like, bam. Awesome.
See? There you go. All right, next one. Houston Rockets shooting guard James Harden took heat on social media last night for sporting a mask with a symbol that represents Blue Lives Matter, a police advocacy group. But Harden has a simple explanation for why he sported a pro-police face mask amid a national conversation over police brutality. Mm-hmm. He just liked the way that it looked. He said, quote, "Honestly, I wasn't trying to make a political statement. I wore it because it covered my face and my beard. I just thought it looked cool. That was it." Does James Harden deserve criticism for wearing the mask, whether he knows the meaning of the symbol or not? Swipe left or swipe right?
If I don't think he deserves criticism, I swipe left.
Correct.
I'd swipe left. I think that I'm pro police. I think that police officers have an incredibly difficult job. I know a bunch of them. All of the people that do security for the Lakers are off duty LAPD officers. It's the overwhelming problem they have of a few bad guys, and it's just one of those jobs where you can't have any bad guys. They're given so much power and authority that you need to weed out the bad ones, but that doesn't mean that there aren't an overwhelming percentage of great police officers who are really good people.
But here's the thing, it is a political statement, because for whatever reason, Black Lives Matter opposes Blue Lives Matter. It's sort of like All Lives Matter. It's African-American people who are being oppressed and being mistreated by police officers. And so a lot of people will respond to Black Lives Matter with Blue Lives Matter. So it's controversial. It's a controversial statement for James Harden. I think he looked at it and thought, hey, this is a cool mask. I think I'll wear it.
Right. Probably didn't think it through.
Yeah.
But I don't think that all police should be
no, of course
like
not.
Like any other group. I don't think you should paint everybody with one brush. It's stupid.
No, and I remember last night, as soon as I saw this pop up on Twitter, I saw his name was trending, clicked on it, and I saw what was going on. I was like, there's no way. Like, because it is a cool-looking mask, the one that he has. It's got, like, a skull at the bottom, and then it's got the symbol. And I was like, there's no way that he knows what that meant. He probably saw it in, like, a gas station or at the airport or something. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'm going to buy that. All right, so last one here on Friday. As Mason always says, everybody's got a podcast these days.
Yep.
And the latest one of note is former First Lady Michelle Obama.
Wow.
The Michelle Obama podcast will debut later this month exclusively on Spotify. Guests on the show will include her mom, Conan O'Brien, the former advisor to President Obama, Valerie Jarrett, and other celebrities, journalists, and activists. Is the podcasting medium becoming overrun with big names and celebrities, like, over-commercializing things?
Well, here's
swipe
a great,
left or swipe right.
Swipe left. I think that the more podcasts, the better. Here's the thing about podcasts. I would equate it, Mace, with what it was like back in the day when you went to the record store, or now when you go on. There's room for a million podcasts.
Yep.
That, you know, we can pick whoever we want to listen to. I don't think that there's a limit of good podcasts. I'm super into the Almost Famous podcast right now on Origins. I think it's super interesting. But it's going to be over. It's only 5 or 6 episodes. And then I got to find something else. So I'm not against anybody coming up with a podcast, including Michelle Obama. And I, in particular, I want her to interview her brother. Do you know who her brother is?
Craig Robinson.
He's actually one of the first guests on the show.
Yeah, I'll listen to that. I met him once when he was the coach at Oregon State. Seems
he's
like
the
a
president
really
of the
dude.
National Association of College Basketball Coaches, I think.
Yeah, so I think that'd be a fun podcast to listen to.
Yeah. You know, I think podcasting now, I'll swipe right, podcasting now is like going to a magazine rack back in the day. It's like you've got a specialty for every single thing. And the other thing about podcasts that's interesting, and Lindsay, you probably know this, about 75% of the podcasts on iTunes, there's been no podcast for over a year. So people abandon podcasts all the time, and then they're just left there. So for
it's a
example,
it's a junkyard of podcasts.
There's a junkyard of podcasts. Hey, I think I'd start one, and then they get tired of it after 6 weeks, and it's gone, and it just stays there. But you know, that's why you know, I work really hard on my podcast. I would imagine that when my radio career is over, that's what I intend to be doing, is to keep doing the podcast. And I will say that if you want to find podcasts, go to stevemason.com and subscribe.
There you go. Free plug.
Free plug.
Exactly.
Well, not free.
I think I love, yeah, you have to work for it.
Yeah, you listen to a lot of podcasts, Lindsay.
Yeah, I love the podcast medium. I think it's fantastic and it's fascinating, and especially right now where it's still the wild, wild west, where it's really not like regulated in any way, shape, or form. And it's going to be interesting to see over the next couple years what happens with Spotify and how some of these bigger media companies like Verizon and even Apple, how they choose to evolve in the podcast world. But I know that there's a portion of the population that thinks that podcasts are, you know, like they're more for like a rogue thing, and that Hollywood's coming in and taking over all the podcasts, and they're taking it over from people who otherwise wouldn't have a voice. And it's like, you still have your podcast.
You're not taking away the podcast.
Yeah, there's just a lot better production these days, so you just got to step your game up.
Yeah, and by the way, podcasts, you don't have to follow any rules. Like the podcast that I did with John Ireland was an hour and a half long.
Yeah, some of them could be 4 hours long.
Commercial free, by the way.
Commercial free. The podcast I did with George Sedano, hour and a half long. John, in a couple of weeks, I want to do the podcast where you interview me.
Bring it on. Let's go.
Because I, in the way I interviewed you, got some really personal stuff. Turn the tables on me. And see what comes up. All right. Thank you very much. That is Radio Tinder for you. Coming up next is the biggest story of the day. We will dig into what's going on with the Washington football franchise and Daniel Snyder. That's coming up next for you. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.